Just to review, we did chapter 6 last time in its totality, and why we felt that chapter 6 is actually the opening nevuah of this book. Right? I mean, no secret. God says, who wants to be a Navi? And Yeshayahu says, here I am, choose me. Sounds like the beginning of his book. The only question for us is, why wasn't that chapter 1? Okay? The answer I gave last class was that chapter 1 begins with such a devastating prophecy. Chapter 6, I'm sorry. Begins with such a devastating prophecy. There's nothing like it in all of Tanakh. Right? Remember it. The devastating prophecy is that God tells Yirmiyahu, yeah, I keep saying Yirmiyahu, I told Yirmiyahu right before this. God tells Yeshayahu, I don't want them to listen. Harden their hearts. Fatten their minds. I don't want them to listen. I don't want to be made a sucker. They have to suffer some kind of setback, some kind of indignity, some kind of punishment, which I likened last class, if you recall, to the teenager getting against the car the first time. Remember, the father says you have to go without the car for some time. Because if I don't pull back right now, worse will happen. Remember the parable I gave last time, right? Okay. That couldn't be chapter 1. You can't put chapter 1. I mean, the Navi's whole existence is to get the people to improve themselves. And here this Navi is saying, I want you to fatten your hearts, like Paro, if you will. I'm going to harden their hearts? What Navi does that? Okay? Someone comes to your office, you're a doctor, you're supposed to try to get them to heal themselves. Not to say, you know what, I need you to get sick right now for a little while, and because I know it's better for you right now. It'll help you get better. We'll bottom out. Okay? Okay, let's go back to chapter 1, please.
I just have a question.
Please.
About the class. What's the
quizzes?
Like, is there a midterm final?
Well, it's on Canvas, by the way.
The
grade proportion. There are a few assignments. I put a lot more weight on classroom attendance and participation. Okay? My objective is to get you to know this material. And I suspect, and this is after many years of teaching in grade school, that just simple attention and tuning in, right, and being invested in what I have to, it's my obligation to keep you entertained, right? I have to give a good presentation, is that is a lot more than a homework and a test. You'll remember that, okay? What you have to study for a cram into a test and then forget a week later is not my objective, okay? I don't just mean to say that, you know, I want you to learn this guy, I want you to know him, I want you to be able to teach him to your children, and I want you to recognize him when you get him in Haftorah. Okay? What we did on Tuesday was, this past Shabbos is Haftorah. Right? And Yeshayahu has, get this, while he is one of 8 possibilities for a Haftorah, Yeshua, Shofim, Shmu, Malachim, Yeshayahu, Yemiyahu, Yechezkel, Treyasar, he's one of 8 opportunities for Haftorah, that means about 12.5% of the Haftorah should come from Yeshayahu. Over 35% of the Haftorahs of the year come from Yeshayahu. This will go a long way into explaining why we say Haftorahs. What you probably heard someplace is historically wrong. Why do we say Haftorahs? What have you heard? The famous Shalah. It never appeared before the 17th century, this reason for saying Haftorahs, and is historically mistaken. Any of it here? Why do we say, whatever, you read the Torah portion, I get that, that's in the Gemara, that's from Sukkim. But why do we have to read some stories in the Nevi'im that relate to the Torah reading? Never? Yes,
what
did you hear?
I don't know if it's correct, but what I heard was that there was anti-Semitism, Jews were forbidden to read the Torah, so they were reading
correct.
The Torah.
That's the Shalah's reason, it's plausible. We didn't want us to read words of Torah, so the Jews said, okay, I can't read Torah in Shul, so let me read something that touched that Torah reading. I can't read about the Nazir in Parshas Noso, so let me read about Shemshon. First of all, that reason does not appear anywhere. right? When the Greeks prohibited the reading of Torah, they prohibited the reading of Nevi'im and Ksuvim also. Okay? You know what I'm saying? Well, how would this give an answer? Alright? The real reason for doing Haftorah has to do with instilling inspirational stories of redemption and especially end of days, God's message to the people that I'm with you even in spite of all your suffering, that it was meant to be some kind of inspirational message connected to the Torah. That's why all Haftorahs always end on a high note. Okay? So that's why Yeshayahu gets over a third of the Haftorahs of the year, even though he's only one of eight possibilities. Yeshayahu is inspirational. The Shabbos, all prophets are inspirational. Yes, but Yeshayahu is constellation. Yeshayahu, more than any other Navi, gives us hope for the future. Gives us every Haftorah is hope for the future. Yeah, but Yeshayahu has more to choose from. You know this. The last seven Haftorahs of the year are all from Yeshayahu, right? From Tisha B'Av till Simchas Torah. I shouldn't say Simchas Torah. I should say until Rosh Hashanah. From Tisha B'Av till Rosh Hashanah, all the Haftorahs are from Yeshayahu. Okay? Everyone good? So let us please turn to chapter 1. Okay? For this class, you will need a Navi. Okay?
Could we use Safari now?
If Safari is available with the commentary.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Right? So if you have a computer, good. I'm never going to look and say, ha!
No, it's good.
No. If you have a computer and you're learning with me, I assume you're in Yeshayahu. Okay? But if you don't have a computer, come with one of these. Okay? I brought an extra one today for you. Oh, you have? No. Everybody? Okay, good. All right. There's always an extra one in this drawer. Okay? You need a Yeshayahu in front of you in the land. Okay. So, he introduces himself in the beginning. We say this is not his first prophecy. Okay? And he begins his very opening statement is something that I've prepared. This out, and he is the king of biblical parables. What I mean by this is something that you probably hear often in speeches and sermons. I would say in modern times, probably Martin Luther King was the one of the great experts of our generation of employing this type of speech making. Explain what I mean. And Yeshayahu was definitely the personality in Tanakh who took this to its extreme. Is where you want to make a particular point, and you make that point in three or four different parallel ways. Okay? I want to say people are filled with guilt, filled with iniquity. So I say, Rabbim, Pishechem, Va'atsumim, Chatvaseichem. You see the parallel structure? I have two words that mean many and profound, and I have two words that mean sins. Do you get it? Actually, I didn't make this up. These are not words in Yeshayahu, they're actually words in Amos. Yeshayahu's pretender. There are two approaches to biblical parallelism, and I will expose you to both in this class. There are two approaches to this type of pasuk. Okay, the Hebrew word for biblical parallelism is tikbolet. One is that he's just being cute. He's just repeating himself. You have so many pshaim, and you have such profound sins. Okay. Martin Luther King wanted to speak about the African American community that had was not appropriately and properly receiving the benefits of the gifts and the promise of America, the American dream. Right? So he would say, let's say something like this, that the African American women are fixing the beds in hotels they could never afford to pay for. They are cleaning offices that won't hire them to work. They are, and he would use 5 or 6 or 7 and go on and on and on to brilliance to make his point. Right? Yeshayahu, usually you just need to do this 2 or 3 times. Right? Yeshayahu does this sometimes 7 times, 13 times, in one place 24 times. He says the same thing 24 times in chapter 3. Which is why on your syllabus, this is what you'll find on Canvas. I gave it out last class, I think, a hard copy. What we're doing week to week. You know what I gave out last time?
Yes.
See, Isaiah's use of repetition, you see that? In the second one, not happening. Thank you. You see Isaiah's use of repetition, chapter 1. Okay. We will approach this. This is our objective today, is to go through these sources on this page. We will approach this from 2 different directions. One is to just say, don't read this so closely. It's just he's just saying 2 different words, meaning a lot of sins, a lot of guilt, a lot of, okay, big deal. Right? Okay. The Torah says, Ha'azinu ha'shamayim va'adabera v'tishma ha'aretz imrei. Okay, so you see again, 2 words for listen, two things that are listening, 2 words for what they're listening to. You get it? I'm just being, right? So biblical parallelism tends to be 2 statements, sometimes 3 for effect. Right? You get it? There is another approach to this that says we should analyze the words to a greater extent to gain as much of a message as we can. What is the difference between a pesha and a chet? Is there a qualitative difference in Hebrew between the two? Which is worse, chet or a pesha? So let's look up a thing to do is to look up at a concordance. You all know what a concordance is? An alphabetical listing of all the words of Tanakh. Right? Okay. If you look up in the concordance to Vayechta or Vayifsha, Vayifsha is much worse. Vayifsha is to rebel. Vayechta is to make a mistake. A chet is a mistake. You bring a chatas for a shogeg in the Torah, right? Mm-hmm. What? The music floor?
Yeah. Yeah. Right next door.
Should the door be closed?
Sounds pretty biblical.
Wow. You should at least be able to play piano.
Sounds like a little shift in our room. That's why the piano's here, because
it costs money. Yeah. Alright, so be it. Okay, so a chait is a mistake. We all commit chaits. But a pesha is a rebellion. Right? Okay, so right away I see there's a difference. But you know what? Then these words are difficult. Because these words seem to be switched. Shouldn't it be rabim chatoseichem? Everybody has a lot of chaits. We commit 30 chaits a day. Come on, we're humans. We make many mistakes. All right? But Pesha, why should we have Rabim? Don't you see Amos is being cute with the people? You guys are so evil that even you have lots of Pesha, and you know what? Atzum means like profound. Even your chaits are profound. There's really probably only one really profound chait in the Torah. What is that? It's funny, that's what we call it, isn't it? That's a judgment that it was the heir of Rav that made it, and the rest of Bnei Yisrael committed a chait. You can't say it was a pesha. They thought that in the absence of Moshe the man, they said, Moshe Ish, let's make something else between ourselves and God. They didn't think that this calf they just made with their own hands took them out of Egypt. No. This calf represents the God who took them out of Egypt. And it wasn't even the Jews who made it. It was the Abraham. How do I know? Because it said, Ela Elopecha Yisrael. This is the God, O Israel, that just took you out of Egypt. Because the people making it weren't Israel. They were the Egyptians who went out with them. But on Erev Rav Alo Itam, it says in the beginning of the Shara. So okay, maybe that's why we can call Chet. We don't say Pesha Ha'egel. We say Chet Ha'egel, fine. But by saying, but just thinking in the Torah, what's the... Most Chets don't come with a punishment. But there's one that comes with a whole life-altering punishment because it's a very profound Chet.
Oh, like when you speak bad about someone else?
I don't know. How can you prove that whether that's a Chet or a Pesha? I'm talking about a profound chait. What's the worst mistake you could ever commit? Mistakenly?
Murder.
Killing someone. I wouldn't call that murder, though.
What's called?
Careful, because lo tirtzach means don't murder someone.
Yeah, what's the word for it?
Harag, I don't know, killing.
Or even to accidentally kill somebody?
Homicide?
No.
Yeah, it is a type of homicide, yes. There's purposeful homicide, there's a mistaken, there's negligent homicide, you know what I'm saying? So, but wouldn't you agree that the worst mistake you could make is mistakenly taking someone's life? Right? Is there a punishment for mistakenly committing adultery? No, actually. Right? It can have devastating results if someone doesn't want to accept a mistake, but the Gemara doesn't have a punishment for mistaken adultery. I made a mistake. I didn't know. I thought it was my wife. It was someone else's wife. I'm just telling you that there is a Gemara on that question. But mistakenly taking a life has to alter your whole life. You have to go to a city of refuge. All right. So by saying your chaits are atzumim. So now all of a sudden these four words mean something totally different than what you thought. Just a prophet repeating a lot of sins. You get it? The second approach that I just took, see, this is, why not? Let's do it every time we can. You get it? Okay? Rashi is generally of the opinion to do that. Okay? To analyze both sides of a parallelistic structure. Right? Okay, it's generally right, and Chazal. Chazal meaning the Gemara. Generally, the position of Chazal to analyze each side of a parallelistic structure. Okay, which means that there is a qualitative difference between Daber and Amar, or why Lahazin goes with the Shemayim as opposed to Tishma, which goes to the Oretz. How would you translate these two words in English? Tishma means to
listen,
hear, and Hazin means to remember. This is a line in the Simon Garfunkel song, people talking without hearing, people something without hearing, people something without listening. Okay, so would you say that listen is a little more than hearing? You can all hear my voice, but you have to be paying attention to be listening to my voice. Right? Okay, let's look at these pages. I just want to tell you that what we're about to do is to analyze a stylistic of Yeshayahu, which puts him in the class by himself in Tanakh. No one does the repetition like I just described to you. 24? 13? 7? Yeah, wow. Okay. Ya'arov kamatar l'kheh. Everyone sees source number one, close the stop, right? Ya'arov kamatar l'kheh tizal katal imrasi. So now he's using two more words for what God wants to tell us. One is called likhi, one is called imrasi. Top of the page. Very first source, Baram Lamedeh. Kisi'irim alei deshe, v'chiruvivim alei esev. Okay, I want to analyze these words. Kisi'irim alei deshe, v'chiruvivim alei esev. Let's start with these six words. You might not know what si'irim and rivivim are yet, but you probably do know what Deshe and Esev is. What's the difference between those two words? Esev is particular, and Deshe is general. Each particular Esev, there are all kinds of different Esevs. There's scallions, there's spinach, there's lettuce, right? Esev produces a lot of different, usually something green, that grows from the ground. Deshe is the general terminology of everything that grows from the ground. Right? Torah says, Tachshei ha'aretz. You wouldn't say Tachsir ha'aretz. Tachshei ha'aretz. Okay? So that would mean that this is talking about groups. This is talking about individuals. Oh, now we're getting someplace. What are Si'irim and Rivivim? Anybody in here? The different types of... There are over 20 different words for this thing that Si'irim and Rivivim are in the Tanakh. And you know what? The Eskimos only have one word for this. Torah has over 20 words for this. The Eskimos only have one. Come on, be clever. What am I talking about?
Rain.
Rain. Eskimos have over 20 words for snow, though. And Tanakh only has one. Sheleg. Why the difference? It's a coincidence. Today, all my grandchildren had off. They're called school off all over Yerushalayim.
Because it's snowing.
Look for pictures.
Yeah.
We've got a ton of snow today. All right? Why does Tanakh only have one word for snow?
Because there's not much snow in Israel.
Because there's not much snow in Israel. Come on. The Eskimos get all kinds of different snow. You get late snow, early snow, driving snow, powder snow. Right? Okay? In Israel, where there's all tons of types of rain, so you have all these kind of words for rain. Zarzif. You ever hear that word for rain? Zarzif. In Eov. Eov has over 10 different words for rain. You think Matar, Yeshem. Okay, what else? Si'irim and Rivivim are different types of rain. Okay, can you, anybody good in Hebrew? I mean, Sa'ara is a driving wind. So Si'irim are the very, very heavy early winds, early rains. That's called Si'irim. Rivivim? Wait, doesn't that mean heavy? No, Rivivim is the lightest rains. You ever look at night and like a misty rain and a light? It looks like there are tiny droplets. It looks like there's millions of these droplets through, you can see in the light. Rivivim is very light rains, but there's more drops. Seirim is the heavy rains. Now, give me a message from the thing from that.
Okay.
The Asa. Come on, Father, are you working with me here? What am I doing? What did I just do?
You flipped the words.
Why?
To one of us, the parallelism.
Because when you're speaking to individuals, I'm going to come to my office and I'm going to tell you what you need to do for this class. I'm going to be very light and come to you with like living here. But you know, when someone is speaking to a whole group, you could be, you know, you could be a little harsher because I'm not speaking to any particular person. And each person can say, oh, he's not really talking to me. I don't do those things. I had a rabbi in a sermon on Shabbos morning. He's speaking to a shul of 400 people. He can be, you know, this is what we really need to do. Right? When we talk to an individual, you've got to talk with your name and talk lightly. You know what I'm saying? Don't you see that if you restart reading text this way, like Rashi does, you're extracting so much material from it. You hear? Okay? This is the general approach of Chazal and Rashi to biblical parable. Okay? When I have a repeated statement, it's not just coming to say A another way with nothing to be gleaned. Okay? Now you can take this to an extreme. See these two lines here? Very familiar with them. Work with me here. One of these two lines is more descriptive and more easily understood than the other. Yatzar es hashamayim v'lo yihyeh matar. One is a little vague, one is more clear. Explain.
I don't really understand what that means, to stop the heaven, but we understand what it means.
Correct. I'm pretty clear there won't be any rain. So what do you mean by I'll stop up the heavens? So if you had just asked someone very quickly, answer in 5 seconds, please. What does it mean to stop up the heavens? What would you say? What's the first thing that comes to your mind if I say the heavens are stopped up?
Stopped up.
The heavens are stopped up. What does that mean? Someone put a plug in that? No, it means that there's no rain. Isn't that what you'd say? Right? But Rashi, and in the Gemara too, by the way, in this particular case, says that this can't mean there won't be rain. Because if this top line means there won't be rain, then... It's redundant. Why would they need the Torah to say that, well, if you don't listen to me, there won't be rain, and there won't be rain? Okay? That's generally Rashi's approach. Okay? Rashi's own son, or grandson, I should say. Rashi didn't have sons, he had daughters. Rashi's grandson, Rashbam. Okay? Rav Shmuel ben Meir. Meir was married to Rashi's daughter, Yocheved. And Rashbam was very critical of Rashi for being so analytical like this. Wait a second, Rashbam. It's a Gemara in the Sefer Tainis. We're going to see this shortly. Rashbam says, I know the Gemara. The Gemara is Drash. The Pshat is that the Torah is just repeating itself. So what? Maybe Rashi is saying Drash. Rashi said, "Anilo basil alupshuto shel mikra." I'm going to be pshat. Rashbam was like the next generation of pshat. I'm sure you know, right? Rashbam is the greatest pashtan in the whole Torah. Even when Ibn Ezra is willing to admit that the isha kushit that Miriam was talking about, you know what I'm talking about? Ibn Ezra, also a pashtan, but Ibn Ezra was much more traditional than Rashbam. Ibn Ezra says we have a tradition that the woman that Miriam was talking about was Tzipora. All right? Why the Torah calls her Kushit is a different situation, but that it's Tzipora. The Shvam says no. Moshe was married to an Ethiopian woman. How do we know? Because it says right there. Shakushit. You got me? Okay. So Rashbam argues with his grandfather and he says, Zaidi, I don't like this. This is not Pshat. Yotzaris HaShemayim, we know what it means. You agree now that when you just heard that, what does it mean to stop up the heavens? What are you going to say? It means it's not going to hail? It's not going to snow? We don't see those things in Israel so often. But Rashi says there won't be any wind. There won't be activity in the heavens. That's what it means at the top. Because if like you said, if it means there won't be rain, then the Torah is going to say there won't be rain. Okay? Work with me on this exercise here. Turn the page to source number 8. Turn the page to source number 8. Everybody see it? Everybody on source number 8? Background to this pasuk is Paro commanding midwives to kill Jewish babies. Okay, everyone got it? Okay, Bluma, please read the pasuk. Where it says 17, it says that Tirana Hamyados. Okay. I have the translation right there in front of the page.
As the Midrash fear God, and we did not do as the king of Egypt has spoken unto them, but they saved the lives of men and children.
Okay, Rashi staunchly disagrees with that last English translation you read. They saved the lives of men and children, meaning they let the boys live. Why would Rashi say that can't be what the end of the pasuk means? They didn't listen to what Cairo, the king of Egypt, told them to do. They let the boys live. It can't mean they let the boys live. Explain. Talk to me here. Tell me you're getting this. Because?
That's what Paro commanded them not to do, is that the boys?
Paro commanded them to kill the boys. There are two parts to this puzzle. A, they didn't listen to Paro. B, they let the boys live. Why would I need they let the boys live? I know from A that they let the boys live. When they didn't listen to Paro. You got me? So, therefore, rather than say that the pasuk Bloomer just read is repetitive, Rashi is going to say, but tzachayena eseyeladim must mean something else. Let's read it. Source number 9.
I have a question.
Finish this, and I'm very happy to take it. I don't want to break this train book. But we just read about Tzachayena Seyoladim.
The Tzachayena Seyoladim Nisaf Kos Lahamayim Umazim. But they saved alive the men children. They provided them with water.
Okay, but Tzachayena Seyoladim means, according to Rashi, they provided them with food and water. Water and food. How did Rashi know that? Alright, it's a metric, true. But why not just say they let the boys live? Because the beginning of the pasuk implies already that they let the boys live. You know what I'm saying? I don't need Yotzaris HaShemayim. In other words, V'lo Yamatar. I don't need they didn't listen to Paro. How? In other words, oh yeah, they let the boys live. I know that already. Remember, Rashi is always dealing with TMI. This is too much information. I know this already. You're giving me more information than I need. The Torah's words are very parsed. Okay? They're parsed. Yes, now.
If there are two lines, but one's a little more vague, wouldn't it be easier to explain the more vague one in a different way? Like, meaning the first part, that they didn't listen to Paro, wouldn't it be easier to come up with another explanation for they didn't listen to Paro, rather than finding a different way to explain that they saved the men, the boys?
That's a very, very perceptive point, which is what fits here.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's possible that the Tzachayena itself implies something like they gave life to the boys. They gave us more than just they let them live. Maybe that's why.
Because, I mean, there are multiple decrees, I feel like, so it would have been easier to make sense of.
I've taught this so many times, and this kind of question never came up, but there's a Ramban in Devarim that says, Lo sechayeh kol neshama, regarding the Canaanite nations. And Ramban says, the Torah allows you to let them live, just don't lo sechayeh kol neshama, don't help them. So maybe that's what it means here. Okay, does everybody see where this is going, okay? I want to do one more. This is a story you may know. You all heard of Bruria, right? The name of his wife, right? So, source number 7. I'm going to read it for you. It's in Aramaic. So I'm going to work with it. But you stay with me on the basic parallel question, which is our topic, of course. Starts off as follows. Everyone, stay with me. Source number 7. Hanahu biryoni dehavi b'shivavu b'seder Rebbe Meir. Biryoni was a brigand. He was a tough guy in the community of Rebbe Meir. Bahavu kumitzara leituva, and he was always angering Rebbe Meir. His behavior, his antics. Got it. I'm continuing now in the third line. Habakaboy Rebbe Meir rachmi alu ki hechidili musim. Rebbe Meir prayed to God that this man should die, and his wife Bruria got wind of this. So she told him, Umra le Bruria divisu. You see it? You don't see it? My guy does it. Why are you praying for him to die? Mishum dichsiv yitamu chatoim? Because it says in Tehillim, right? Familiar with the pasuk? Yitamu chatoim in Haaretz. You know how it finishes? What comes in? Yitamu, the famous ending of Baruch Hinashim. Yitamu chatoim. Min ha'aretz u'rishoim od einam. She wants to create a moral philosophy about how her husband should behave regarding this brigand, right? This thug. And she wants to create it out of this pasuk, and she does it in two ways. Okay, one, philologically. Philology means the meaning of words. Philologically, she wants to deal with what this word means. Okay? Two is our topic, parallelistically. Okay? She wants to convince her husband that you should not pray for him to die, you should rather pray for him to do tshuva, to repent. You got me? So she says the following. Miksiv chotiv chatoim miksiv. It doesn't say let the sinners die. Yitamu chotiim min ha'aretz. It says yitamu chatoim min ha'aretz. Which she wants to mean let the sins die. By the way, she's wrong. That's not what we call chatoim equals chotiim. In the very first pasuk in Tehillim, Ashrei Yo'isha Shelo Halach B'Tzeras Yishrei Medera Chatoim Lo Amad. It doesn't mean the ways of sins. It means the ways of sinners. Like Yishraim, Derech Chatoim, Lo Shav Leitzim. Right? It doesn't mean scoffing. It means scoffers. Right? She's wrong philologically. But, okay, it's true that chatoim can mean both of those. Can mean sins or sinners. Right? But she's making a philological argument because she wants it to fit a philosophical argument, which is, what's the philosophical argument? Stay with me, please. Better to pray for a wicked person to do tshuva than to pray for a wicked person to die. So that's a philosophical argument. Rebbe Meir might have disagreed, his wife, whenever the two of them engage in the Talmud, she always gets the upper hand. Okay? So, she now turns the argument, a class in Yeshayahu can certainly be philosophical, right? But right now we're talking about parshanut, we're talking about exegesis, we're talking about parallelistic approaches towards similar words in the pasuk, and that's the direction she takes now. Because she argues with him now, and she may be right on this score. She argues with him on, I'm not even sure if she's philosophically right, but she argues now on exegetical terms. Why would David need to say both these words twice? Based on what you said before, which is very, very good discussion on this topic, which of these two lines is more clear?
Which is more clear, you said?
Yeah, which is, you said, there's usually a vague one, and there's a, you know, I'm not sure what odeinam means. Nitamo means to cease, to end, die. Right? Odeinam, You see, she says this one is the one that's more clear, to prove it. Rishon Odeinam means pray for him to do tshuva. He won't be a Russia anymore. Not that he won't exist. He just won't be a Russia. He'll be a Tzaddik now. Right? Don't pray for the sinner to die. Pray for the sin. Sounds Christian, right? Pray for the sin to die. Right? And therefore, we won't be a Russia because now we'll be a Tzaddik. Okay? It's not Christian. It's Jewish. Okay? So that's what she says. Now take a look. Oh, Shfil Lasefe the Krah. Says, lower yourself to go to the end of the pasuk, as if though he doesn't want to. Shfil Lasefe the Krah. She's very very snarky in Korea, always when she deals with her husband. Or Rishayim Odeinam. Keep it the Tamu Chatorim or Rishayim Odeinam. Why do I have to be write this twice if the top line means that he wants sinners to die? Let the sinners die. Let the wicked ones die. What do you have to? I want. What do I need that? So she says, I'll tell you. Ela boy rachmi Elohi deliyadu b'tshuva u'rishoyim odeinam. If you pray for him to do tshuva, then nimela. If it means let the here it means sins. Here it means wicked. You get it? Let the sins cease from the person, and therefore we will not have any wicked person here because he's no longer sinning. But if this word means sinner, then why do I need the same thing to be said twice? She's not making this on philosophical grounds. She's or philological grounds. She's making it on exegetical grounds. Why would David have to say the same thing twice? Yes.
You said we don't translate it as sins. We translate it as sinners. So then, how do you explain the double language in that?
Because double language is the way the Bible speaks.
But meaning the whole, every other set of...
It's drash. But I disagree with what I'm saying to him now, personally. But that's what Rishbam would say. It's drash to try to find all the different meanings of it. It's just the way that people speak. That's the way we say things twice. Okay, Trevor, I think we're ready. Look up the first prophecy in Yeshayahu. Now, he gives us an introduction that sounds very much like Parshas Haazinu. Right? Everyone see it? Are we reading Pasuk Bet now? Okay? Alana, can you read? You have in front of you? Shimu Shamayim. Okay, but you see, he's plugging into Parshas Haazinu. Shimu Shamayim Vahazini Earth. He switches it around. Right? He uses Shema for the Shamayim and Haazini for Oretz. Why do you think he switched around Moshe's words? Well, he doesn't want to be totally plagiaristic. Right? Can you think of another? Look at the words. I mean, it's very cute. Why put Haazini near Oretz and Shema near Shemayim? Because Yeshayahu is also the king of this type of biblical writing. It's amazing. It's really amazing. Listen to these words. Shmita, Shabbos, Shalom, Sheva Shabsos, Sheva Pamim, Sheva Shalom. What am I doing? Shviz. Practically every ancient language, and even modern languages. Hush. Shalom. Yeshayahu is onomatopoetic and alliterative. You're going to love his alliterations. When the Torah wants to talk about, step back from your chaotic life in the fields and observe Shmita. You can just hear the shins telling your life to calm down, get off that technology, enjoy the next 24 hours. Now, what's he doing? Alana, do you see what you read?
Yeah.
He puts the shin with the shin. Yeah, the shin man with the shin man. This is even a better alliteration. Look at that. Why didn't Moshe do that? Because Moshe wasn't interested in alliteration the way Yeshayahu was. Okay? And this is actually a topic that I don't have in this book. I wrote just in time for Gracious. My Shmos is not ready yet, so this is a book on the parsha that I just read. It says 10 divrei Torah from each parsha for different stages of your life. Is it a Torah for birth, for bas mitzvah, b'nai mitzvah, wedding? I don't do funerals in this. I don't say, for each parsha, because rabbis are writing funerals. This is for balabas. Rabbi doesn't need my help connecting a funeral to this week's parsha, which we pretend not to do anyway. But if you go into a shower brachas and somebody asks you to say Dvar Torah, and it's Parsha by Yishlach, hey, you look up to Yishlach, Dvar Torah number 8, and you're going to find a nice Dvar Torah connecting the Parsha to knowledge.
That's to wash up with
Chatan Kala.
What? What is it connect to
with Chatan Kala?
Is it
for
Parsha
by
Yishlach
Dafka?
I'm asking.
Each parsha connects to a Dvar Torah about a birth, about a marriage, you see the name mitzvah, birth. Okay. And then it has other Dvar Torah for like the different parts of the day. I want to read something from you from this book for today that we did last class. I'll get to that. Okay. So you're going to see a lot of this in Yeshayahu. Okay. But there's something incredible. It's not going to come up for about another 3 or 4 weeks, or maybe even more. But there's something incredible in Yeshayahu's book. Yeshayahu's first 10 chapters. This is going to be a tall order, but I hope you'll enjoy this. It's going to be modeled after Parshas Hazim. Huh? So obviously we're going to have to know, what is Parshas Hazim about? This is some basic, simple point Hazim is trying to make. It's a testimony about something. Yeshayahu's first 10 chapters, and I think that he's purposely doing this. He wants to establish to the reader, hey, plug into Parshas Hazim if you want to really get my message. Okay, you got it? And I'm going to be cute with my use of Hebrew. Enjoy. Right? Yeshayahu you have to catch it. Right? He's going to shortly say, you know what God was hoping? Yivisi l'mishpat. Nay mispach litzidoka bihine seoka. Now, in translation, this is crazy. It's stupid. I was hoping for charity. I'm sorry, for justice, and instead I got leprous growths. I was hoping for charity, and instead I got screams. No, it does not translate well. But obviously you see what he's doing, though. I'm hoping for mishpat. And what did I get instead? Mispach. I'm hoping for tzedakah. What did I get instead? Se'opa. Come on, look at the board. You see what he's doing, though? What's the thing he got instead of what God is hoping? A Hebrew word that's the same as the thing God is hoping for, with one letter changed. No, you didn't catch that? That's not going to translate well. Right, it's in chapter 5. When we get up to it, we'll analyze that further. Can anyone be clever enough? I mean, English has a lot of words in it. Can you find a word that sounds like justice that's similar to what a leprous growth might do to your skin?
Jaundice?
Yes! Yes! That's what Robert Alter does in his translation. I was hoping for justice, and instead I got jaundice.
What is that?
Beautiful. Don't you see that the brilliance?
Yellow.
Jaundice turns his skin yellow.
Or green.
No, yellow. Right? Can you do the next one? I was hoping for righteousness, and instead I got... That was brilliant. Yes? All right, this is what... I'll expose you to Robert Alter. You have to know who he is. He just wrote a very large three-volume translation of Tanakh. He says wretchedness. Okay, to wretch is to scream, maybe. So I was hoping for righteousness, and instead I got wretchedness. He's going to lose a little on the actual translation of Tzalka because he needs an English word. That's down. Could you do this in Spanish? Can you do this in German? Can you do? You know what I'm saying? Obviously, you lose things in translation, but when he wants to be cute and use a pun in Hebrew, right? What is this? What do these words mean? God created Adam min ha'adamah. Pasuk in Bereishis. God created Adam min ha'adamah. Just translate the words. What does it mean?
A person from the ground.
Why is that lacking? Because person and ground doesn't sound at all like one another. But in Hebrew, Adam is clearly who's called Adam because he's coming from the Adamah. Since you're on a roll. God created a human from the... You know what compost, another word for compost is? Humus. Humus. H-U-M-U-S. Is soil and earth and trees and rocks and stuff. Right? God created a human from the humus. You get it? Alright, so we're going to see a lot of this in Yeshayahu. You can enjoy his Hebrew, you can enjoy his tricks, you can enjoy his just all of his wordplay. Okay? But now, this is the upshot of this class. Here it is, Pasuk Gimel. Yodashor Konehu. Okay, Gula is not here. Deborah?
What?
You're reading Gimel.
Yodashor Konehu.
Yes.
Sorry.
Okay, so you have a twofer here. Right? You have a double parallelistic pasuk. The ox knows its owner, the donkey knows who puts the feed bag before him. The feed bag of its owner. Israel does not know. My people do not understand. Okay, so you have two separate doubled statements in this passage. The point is very clear. These dumb animals know what they're supposed to do better than you do. Right? Okay? If you're acting like Rashbam, everyone know what I mean by that, right? If you're acting like Rashbam or even Ezra or Radak, who accept the idea that the Torah just talks in biblical parallelism, there's no pshat gain from trying to analyze each pasuk and what the words mean, stuff we've been doing all day today, right? Then there's not much you need to do. The ox knows its maker, the But the chicken knows who puts food before it. It could be any animal, right? But if you want to act like Rashi, stay with me here of the Malbim, Chazal, right? If you want to act like Rashi on biblical parallelism, stuff we've been doing all day, what do you have to do with our pasuk? Pasuk Gimel.
Flip the words. Okay.
And do what with it? The ox knows who owns it. The donkey knows who puts a feed bag before it. If you're like Rashbam, this could be the camel knows who puts a saddle on its back. The elephant knows who puts it could be any two animals, right?
But what is it choosing those animals?
The sheep knows who shears it. So that's, now you're asking a Rashi kind of question. Why did Yeshayahu choose these two animals? Now you have to work harder if you're Rashi on this. Because if you're not Rashi, all you have to do is just say, okay, there's two animals, good deal. He mentions Israel twice, he mentions two animals. But if you want to behave like Rashi, yes, what do you want to say?
That these animals could be stubborn. So the Jewish people are stubborn, which is one of the qualities.
Understood. But what animal is more stubborn, the ox or the donkey?
The donkey.
The donkey is famous for stubbornness.
Ox
no?
has power.
It's like...
Have you heard that? The mule is a donkey and a horse, but yes. Right? So, look what the Rashi does on this topic. You can access Rashi on that, right? I want everyone to see it inside. Okay, Konehu. Rashi and Pasuk Gimel. It's the beginning of Rashi to Pasuk Gimel. Right? Okay? I'm going to get us started by reading, okay? But follow with me. Konehu is mitakno b'charisha b'yom. He puts on a yoke across his head in order for the ox to plow. That is an ox's main activity, is to plow. V'umeachar shahir gilo b'kach yodei abo. After that plow is on the ox's head, he's going to continue doing that for the rest of his life. He's been instructed. He's going to stay instructed. You're given food. He's going to know, okay, this is where... All right. But even before you're given food, he's instructed as soon as you put that yoke across his head. Now, look at me right. It's important, one word. Avol chamor, but a donkey, atom. A donkey is stubborn. Closed-minded. Eino mevin ba'alav, ad she'achilenu. So maybe the difference between a dog and a cat, right? The dog knows its owner. Cat, not so much, right? I once said this in a sermon about the difference between different types of people. A dog says, "My goodness, there are people who live in this place. They give me food. They take me out. They give me a comfortable pillow to sleep on. And they do all these amazing things. They must be God." The cat says, "Oh my goodness, my people I live with, they give me a comfortable place to sleep, they take me out, they give me food. I must be God." Okay, so you see that there are two different types of animals here. The Rashbam, I hope everyone knows what I mean when I'm saying this. Rashbam, Ibn Ezra Radak kind of commentary, who allows the Torah and just say, that's the pshat of the Torah. It's repetitive and you don't need to explain. Yetzaras Shemayim, what do I mean by that? Lo Yamator. So that Sar doesn't have to explain why he mentioned these two animals. It could have been any two animals. Big deal. But a closer reader like Rashi, right, like the Malbim, who wants to make use of every single little terminology, right? Now, Rashi sometimes takes this to an extreme, where any bit of information, right? Avraham's servant gives Rivka two bracelets and a nose ring that weighs 10 shekel, right? And Rashi says that the two bracelets remind her that if she comes with him, her descendant will give the two luchos. with 10 mitzvahs, the weight of the and it says a becca. Becca means that they give the remiss to the half shekel for the Mishnah. Really, Rashi? Come on. What are you writing for? This is not the little Midrash says. He gave her gifts. Rashi says, I know, but that's too much information. The Torah should have just said he gave her gifts. There's more where that came from. If you come with me, my husband, my master is loaded. Right? He wants to impress her with gifts. Why is the Torah telling me how much they weighed and how many of them? Unless there's something more in this story. Don't just tell me any two bits, any two words. If there he mentions the ox and the donkey, this must be representative of different types of Jews. Get me? There's a reason why he mentions these two. And why he says, Evus is a feedback. There's a reason for this. You get it? He's trying to explain. And the other Nevi'im did this too. Yirmiyahu does it too. Yirmiyahu says, this is Israel is a major trail for birds from Europe to Africa. He talks about all the different kinds of birds that fly at a very predictable time of the year. They know their nature. You don't. You're not predictable. The only thing you could be predictable, predicted to do, is to not act accordingly. So Yishayahu here is mentioned. So when Rashi discusses the difference between the ox and the donkey, can everyone understand that he is Lishitasa? He's acting like Rashi. Okay? Please take this, look over, there are some other examples of this, of where Rashi behaves like Rashi, and some examples where Rashi does not behave like Rashi, where Rashi behaves like Rishkan. Okay. Right? And it may be that that's what Rishkan was talking about in source number 19. Read this on your own on the Shabbat, please. Okay? Rashbam in source number 19 talks about his exposure to his grandfather's commentaries, which is interesting because Rashbam was only 16 when Rashi died. Look at what Rashbam writes. He thought he would be the next coming of Rashi. He thought he would replace Rashi as the greatest of the commentaries. Not exactly, but yes, you have a question?
Yeah, sorry, what was the initial on the end about the ox and donkey that he was trying to get across?
So is that some Jews are easier to teach, some Jews are more stubborn. In other words, some of you behave like the ox, some of you behave...
But you're
not like even the best of them. You're not even like dumb animals. But then, hold on. Rashi, afterwards, in the Mikros Gedolos, says, Dovar Acher. And he treats the two animals the same. Seems Rashi, after it gave a second perish where he says he doesn't differentiate between the ox and the donkey. He just says the donkey and the ox never go against their master. They do whatever their master says they should do. The ox plows, the donkey carries. The donkey carries things, and they just do what they're told. In the second commentary, he doesn't differentiate between the two. In other words, the argument I'm trying to make is that possibly late in Rashi's life, that's why I give you this, you can see some of these examples, where Rashi went along with his grandson to say that sometimes the Torah is just repetitive. Shnei goyim bivitnei, shnei le'umim mimeaya to Torah, ulom milom ya'emot, rab ya'avot sa'ir. What is that? Shnei goyim bivitnei, there are two nations inside of your womb. Two nations will depart from your loins. They will constantly be fighting one another, but the younger will prevail. Who heard these words? Rivka. So what is God is just being poetic. Do I have to explain what the A means and what B means there? Surely there has to be some, especially in Shira. Ad Yavoram Ka Hashem, Ad Yavoram Zigun. You told the peace itself. And yet, Rashi is in many, many places try to explain what each side means, and we'll see if Rashi is always behaving like Rashi on this topic. Okay? We will now continue, Mr. Shem, on Tuesday with Yeshayahu's general messages about how bad things are and my vision of how good things can get. Okay? There's a good reason why just not too many blocks from here at all, a little further uptown, there's a wall there called the Isaiah Wall. You familiar with it?
Mm-hmm.
You should take a class trip there.
Where is it?
I was just at the UN last week. I don't know how I managed to get in there, but I was in the General Assembly last Thursday when Israel passed its second resolution in the General Assembly in the last 70 years. And the second resolution, because I was involved with the resolution of calling Holocaust denial a crime. And the UN, for the first time in 70 years, finally defined what you call Holocaust denial. And 114 nations came on. One nation it was farcical how this one nation, after 114 sponsors, you never get 114 sponsors in the UN. 114 sponsors, co-sponsors, got in. Well, the co-sponsors were Germany and Israel. But 114 sponsors, and this one nation, the embassy, ambassador got up and he said how it's absurd that one nation gets to it was crazy. 20, around, of course, 20 nations got up first, really, Malaysia, Egypt. I speak a little Arabic. The Egyptian was very forceful about why it's so important to forbid Holocaust denial. It was really, really quite so. Arab Muslim nations. United Kingdom spoke. Poland spoke. Ukraine spoke very forcefully. Russia spoke very forcefully because they wanted to get more coin out of defeating the Nazis. It was really amazing, but the Iranian ambassador got up there and made such an absolute. I was actually happy to hear his voice. He spoke about 10 minutes. Well, who gets up there and speaks against everyone else said 1.5 million children were marched to their death. And he gets up and says, oh, the country sponsoring it says we have millions of archival evidence that this happened. And the Iranian guy gets up there and he's crazy. Anyway, I was there. I walked on NIM with there's an old elderly survivor of Auschwitz on my show, 96 years old, and she wanted someone to go with. Okay, everybody, maybe we'll take a fast trip to the Isaiah Wall in the springtime when it's nice and warm. Good sheer. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Sheer right near the Isaiah Wall. Have you ever been there? I mean, it's amazing. It's a big wall in Murray Hill, I think it is, something like that. And it has a prophecy of Isaiah on it. Oh, we have to be there, right?
Yeah.
Will they let us?
Yeah.
Are we allowed to? Maybe no, we'll just meet there one day.